My name is Harry. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Just put that away, Jerry. Right away. Well, I like these conservative meetings, I tell you. This is my kind of AA, man. You guys would have scared the shit out of me when I first got here. I'd have been looking in the pots, man. I don't know how you guys were. Really, I'd have been smoking your tea instead of drinking it. I'm not kidding. Something. This is really funny. This has been screwed up since I got here. I thought it was an 8 o'clock meeting, so I got here at 7:45, patting my cell phone in the back and sitting in the back for 45 minutes. Talking to Jerry, which is always a joy. So he's paying me back. He's sitting in the front row. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in on a conversation that me or him are in on, but you're never in on it, man. We rarely know what we're talking about, you know? But we have a hell of a time with each other, which is what it's all about here.
You don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about. I love what Richard said. You know, I don't know if you guys ever watch me play baseball, but I'm not real mellow in the game, you know? Even in practice, I'm known to slide into second base after somebody's shorts because that's my base, you see, you know? And that's the way it's been most of my life, you know? It's just been, I'm aggressive. And that's all there is to it, folks. You know, and I forget who's playing with me, and they're my friends, and, you know. it hasn't got a lot better in 3.5 years here, but it's gotten a little bit mellower. Ask any of the guys at Sunnyvale that I've played with. You know, they thought I was bad in Campbell. You should have seen me when I got with those guys. They told me they were good, and I said, oh, yeah? Catch me, suckers. You know, here we go, man. And we had a good game over there for a while, and then they kicked me out and said that at your age you should be a little bit more mellow than that, Harry, you know, because I'd be out there screaming, kill them, and it was a practice game, you know. And it was a girl at bat, you know. Didn't matter to me, you know. I get into the spirit of things, you see. I get real high, real easy, and always have. That's been my problem. And that and the great inability to say no, you know. You know, if you had one, I'll take three. I'm nervous, man. I'm sitting here blowing it. I'm real tired, and that's probably why I'm nervous. But John asked me what I was going to chair on tonight, and I said, what I wish it was like. So there ain't no telling what you're going to get tonight, but we're gonna try to start it out at least reasonable. I got here because I didn't have any place else to go, and that's bottom line. I got here by getting in the back of a police car that was at my house for the fourth time in 5 days, and telling them I didn't know what you did with people like me, but you had me. And when I got in the back of their car, I had about $100 a day cocaine habit, and I was drinking a case of stout malt liquor, and I was smoking as much dope as I could put in my mouth. And I'd been that way for about not 11 months, 10 months, something like that. Weighed a hot 110, my eyes were crossed, my nose didn't work, and I couldn't tell you my name twice in a row, you know? But I was proud, man, you know, I was a proud motherfucker, boy. You know? I didn't care, you know. They had come on a Friday night because I was playing my bass guitar in my garage at 8 or 9, you know, and I had 2 big Fender stage amps, and I was vibrating windows and fruit trees all up and down my block. And I was by myself as usual. Nobody else could stand me by that time. You know, I was a legend of my own mind by that time. And everybody that loved me had reconsidered, you know. And all had left, and I was having a hell of a time, man. I used to play one note blues bass. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's where you play the same note until you get it right, you know. From the time I was 27 to 31, I played the same note, man. You know, never did get it right, but practice. What can I say? Anyway, they came in and asked me to turn down my bass because the neighbors were complaining because it was 12 o'clock at night, and I got righteously indignant for them disturbing an artist at his work, you know. And I agreed to do that because I'd learned at about 16 that when the police came and told you to turn down the noise, you did it, and they went away. You know, that's no big thing there. It was all street sense, and usually when I was loaded, I had at least that, you know, most of the time. Sometimes even that was gone.
So I turned it down. The next night I had my stereo up, the same amplifiers in the same garage at the same time, and they came back, same two cops, both rookies. And I don't know if you guys had any truck with Campbell rookie police, but they are the assholes of the Western world, boy. They really don't know what they're doing, you know. And if you're like me and dealt with police a lot, that scares the shit out of you, man, because those are the ones that will shoot you. It's not the veterans, man. It's the dummies that are running around trying to get new, you know, and trying to get old and whatever they're trying to do. Anyway, same two guys, and they said, turn it down again. And I said, okay, you know. And that was Saturday night. And then Sunday night they came back, because by that time I had graduated out to the middle of the street where I was throwing gallon jugs of milk in the air, letting them hit the asphalt, you know, showing the kids in the neighborhood the patterns, you know. Check the... Now, my neighbors didn't like me a lot, but their children loved me, you know, because they never did know what I was going to do. I was weird, stranger than dirt all the way through, you know. I was up changing my antenna bunches of times, falling off the roof, and I'd had gill for 6 months, you know. But that didn't bother me, you know. Things like that didn't bother me at all. Anyway, that Sunday night, they said, you know what, you're getting in our face, man. We can't do nothing with you because you're basically just disturbing the peace and being rowdy. But same two cops again, you know. And they said, but what we will do is bust you if we see you away from your house, anywhere. You get out on the streets, I don't care if it's walking on a bicycle or in a vehicle, man, and we see you, you're gone. And that was not the first time that kind of threat had ever been made to me, and I knew that they meant it, because they were rookies and they were very, very emotionally involved in their job, you know. And so I went back in my house and I sat down at my table and I got out my mirror and I got out my beer and I got out my pot and I thought, well, which one, you know, because I was a master of roller coaster pharmaceutical. I don't know if anybody's ever gotten into that, but you take this one to bring you up and that one to take you down and this one to even you off and that one to make it better and this one to change the colors and, you know, on and on and on and on, you know. And I sit down and I try to figure out which one of those things I wanted to do to fix me that night. And and you know, none of them was going to do it. And I was 31. My memory has not improved either. I think I was I was either 30 or 31. And I had been getting loaded since I was 16. And I had not, I couldn't remember stringing together 5 days since I was 16 straight. I had manufactured chemicals. I had distributed chemicals. I had smuggled chemicals. I had been shot, driven out of Mexico 2 or 3 times and various smuggling enterprises. I had taken LSD every day for 3 years because I was manufacturing it, and I had a constant supply, and I got into manufacturing because I wanted that supply, not because it was... I never got rich on it, folks. You know, I never got rich on nothing because I was into taking it as much as I was to selling it. And if I'd buy $100 worth, I'd take 50 and sell 50, you know. And I was lucky if I sold 50. Anyway, it scared the shit out of me, you know, because I couldn't remember ever being out without my wanky. You know, I'd always had something to keep me from looking at myself and something to see about, you know, keeping me from really checking out the state I was in. You know, it always seems like it was really easy to lie to myself when I was loaded and I always say it's just around the corner or the next person through or one more time or whatever it was that always had carried me through to those days. Well, that wasn't working that night either. And I got up from the table and I was done. I don't know what happened. I really don't know what to tell you except that I was done. And I went in and started shaking down, and I started out on the bed and I ended up on the floor because it wasn't moving as far, and I figured it wasn't as far to fall either, you know. And I was all Sunday night and all Monday, and they came back Tuesday, same two cops again, knocked on my door, and the first thing they asked me was, what happened? Were you out of town yesterday, man? We, you know, we didn't have to come, you know. And I said, well, I ain't appreciating your sense of humor, man. And that's when I made my great line of, I'm dying, and I'm going to get in your car, and I don't know what you do with me, but you got me. And I didn't care what they did with me, because I was literally dying, man. I was, you know, I think my body could have gone on a little bit longer, but I was crazy. My mind had ceased to function somewhere about a year before then. And it hasn't changed much, Jerry says. And those who know me, you know, I'm a real serious, studious fellow. All the time, most of the time. Anyway, I take life so fucking seriously these days, man. It's just amazing. Life is, you know what, it's just as much I find that in this program, the more I stay out of my own life, the better off I am. And my whole goal in this program is to stay emotionally uninvolved with me. You know, because whenever I get emotionally involved in what Harry's into or going on down around him or how somebody's trying to screw him over or take his or change his or whatever they're trying to do, then I find I don't think well. So I've been really into watching the flow in the last 2.5 years of sobriety anyway. Just letting things happen to me and not trying to change them too much and to see where they take me. And I tell you what, they've taken me a very, very long way, which we'll get to maybe. Anyway, I got in the back of their car and they took me to Valley Medical Center. I thought I was going to jail and I really didn't care. I had been there before. I'd been there so many times that the thought of going to jail one more time didn't scare me. In fact, it was almost home, you know. I hadn't been there that often that it was home, but it didn't scare me. And I didn't know what we were going to do, and they took me to Valley Med to the social detox. Well, I'd never been to a social detox in my life, you know, and I walked in, and the guy looked at me, and he said, "Holy shit," and the two cops said, "Yeah," you know. And they sat me down, you know, and they said, "Fuck, what, you know, did you get hit by something before you got here?" I said, "No, this is natural." <You know. laughs> I even dressed up, you know, yeah, which was really funny, too. Anyway, we started filling out his questionnaire, and it got down to the part where it says, "When did you have your last drink?" Well, this was Tuesday, and I'd had my last drink Sunday night. And he said, "Oh, man, we can't take you." And I said, you know, I said, "What?" And the two policemen went, "What?" You know? And he said, "We can't take you. You got to be drunk within 24 hours to enter this facility." And the one really funny cop leaned over and said, "Listen, if you don't take him, we're taking you." You know, and that, you know, I'd had a long love affair with the men in blue. I used to sit in these meetings and hear all these old housewives stand up and say, "Oh, he changed my tire for me, pulled up right behind me." And I'd sit there and go, "They never changed my tire." I mean, you know. Every time I had any dealing with those suckers, I got in the back of the car, man, and that's the way it worked in my life. You know, they never did nothing for me. One time, one real dumb policeman in Boulder Creek helped me out, but he didn't know he was doing it. You know, that was another story. Anyway, so I entered the realm of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I entered it not wanting to be here. I entered it not happy at being an alcoholic and an addict at 31. I entered not happy about the state of my affairs at all. I went from that detox to Benny McEwen Center, and at the end of 5 days, I was ready to go home. Man, I was healthy. Now, I know none of you guys probably know about this, but you give an alcoholic on a dead run 3 days to recover, and we can lick the fucking world, man, you know. We get that false adrenaline rush, and we think we got it made, man. That's the one thing that kept us out there so long, you know. We get nailed Friday night and Saturday night. We maybe get well Sunday and Monday, and by Tuesday, we were back out there because it was all, you know, like that again. And somebody, I don't even know who it was, talked me into staying, and they said, "We're going to send you to a house." And I had a house, and I had clothes, and I had money, because I was dealing to support my habit when I couldn't play my music anymore, because I couldn't remember the tunes anymore. And I was, you know, my life was in a very sorry state by the time I got here. And so I went to Fortune's Inn, and I was there 3.5 months learning how to stay here. And I don't remember my first meeting. I couldn't tell you my second meeting. I couldn't tell you where I was at in my third meeting. I probably can remember my fourth or fifth meeting. You know, my state of confusion, and I didn't go to a meeting until I was about 10 days sober, because I was 5 days out at Benny McEwen's, and I was another 3 days in the house before they took me out of it. You know, so I can't tell you where I went. I can tell you that I sit in the rooms, you know, and I thought, "Oh, shit, what is this, man? You know, what have you done to yourself now, man? You know, you seem to have this rare ability to find yourself in the strangest situations, you know." When I was out there using, I used to wake up with one eye, and the first thing I'd do is look at the wall. Now, this, you know, this doesn't sound normal or logical, I'm sure, but this is the way it worked. If the wall was blue, I was home. If the wall was green, I was in jail. If the wall was white, I was in Agnew's. And if the wall was any other color, I didn't know where the fuck I was. You know, and I had to get up and see who was there, who could tell me how I met them, usually. You know, how did we get together, man? Because that's the way I drank. I drank full till boogie. I drank until the end. If we laid stuff on the table, nobody left until that was done. And that's the only way I knew how to get loaded. I didn't know nothing about social drinking. I never tried to control my drinking. I never tried to control my using. I didn't care about that shit. Until it no longer worked anymore, I didn't try to do nothing, you know. I got thrown in jail. I was in jail off and on, always for possessions, always for disturbing the pieces and rioting and inciting the riot. And oh, man, you know, and it was all behind being loaded. You know, I was a political activist. And I didn't start out to be an alcoholic or an addict, man. I sit here for 6 months thinking it was the biggest joke in the whole damn world. You know, why me, man? I used to run with the big boys. I used to manufacture drugs. You know, I used to smuggle this shit. You know, I used to be known for my ability to handle all this stuff. And why me? None of my other friends got it, you know, and they're all worse than me. I used to watch them. I knew that, man. I knew that, you know, my problem was that I just quit doing things, anything, except getting loaded, finding a place to get loaded, you know, finding a place to score, anything like that. My life stopped. And I like to tell you that I was going to the market and stuff like that. My days usually consisted of sitting in my backyard, getting loaded, waiting to be discovered. That was my big dream, man. I was all out there in fantasy land, you know, in la-la land, I've heard somebody say. And I used to wait for somebody to walk in my backyard and say, the Rolling Stones need you, you know. And I was gonna go, you know, I was ready all the time, man, and it never occurred to me that nobody knew who where I lived, you know, and if they did walk back there, I could never play for them, there was no electricity in my backyard, you know, and half the time I didn't have my instruments, they were in hock to somebody else in the band, and, you know, life was really good for a long, long time, getting loaded. I started getting loaded out of, in high school in 1963, and I was one of only three people getting loaded in my high school that I knew of. And nobody got loaded. Nobody smoked dope. Everybody drank. If you were a jock and I was a jock, you drank. And but I smoked. I used to go into L.A. from the desert to Ike and Tina Turner's club with the black men and, you know, go in and hear Motown, man, and get down and pick up a joint for a buck in the bathroom, you know. Get down, man. Yeah, you know. Come back, hide in my car, smoke it, go back in and be cool, you know, and be the only white people in there, me and my partner. He's just scared to death. He was scared to death. I was too loaded to care, you know. And I kept running away from home to be a hippie and kept getting caught and bring back. And he said, okay, it's either the boys' ranch or high school. And I said, well, I'll do high school, you know, because I didn't know what the boys' ranch was. I just knew it was way out in the desert, man. I knew that it was way out there. So I did high school and played sports. Was all Southern Californian football, was all Southern Californian baseball, got out of high school with like four or five scholarship offers and ran away and became a hippie, man, and I was a good one, you know. And my whole life after that consisted of staying one step ahead of the draft because I didn't want to go to Vietnam, and it consisted of seeing life because I was going to go out there and eat it, man. I was going to go out there and do life to the best of my ability because I'd watched for 17 whole years my parents stagnate. And I thought, you know what, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. You know, so I quit listening to them at somewhere about 15 or 14, quit being a Catholic about that time, and I was a four-name Catholic, you know, I was really into that, and that's when I decided to run my own life. And I went to Mexico right after high school, and then from there to New York City, and then traveled. Got back 5 years later to see my parents. And after that, I got into manufacturing. I got into being active against anti-war. I got into being active in registering people. I got into the things for the blacks and the things for the browns and the things for the reds and the things for the yellows, you know, the people for non-discrimination. You know, I got into all that stuff because I was an idealist, too. That's one thing that I know about myself in sobriety. I'm an idealist, too. You know, if I find something that I really believe in, you know what, I'll work my tail off for it. And this program is one of those things. This program has taken the place of that. So I got in these rooms, and I sit in the back, and I thought, God, you're much too cool for this place, you know. You know, I don't know where they got all these people, man, but, you know, Jesus Christ, you know. And the guy's people stood up in the front, and he started saying, God, as I understand him, and I thought, oh, God. Damn, Bible thumpers, man, you know, where the shit are you now, you know? And then John stood up and said, I love Fred, and I thought, oh, no, homosexual Bible thumpers, you know? And I thought I was really done for, man, you know, and I walked around and I, you know, talked dime cup over, Santa Cruz calls it talking out of the side of your mouth, you know, being cool. Hey, how's it going, man? You know, what are you doing these days, man? You know, and we try to be cool here, and we ain't cool. That's why we're here, you know. But that doesn't ever register, you know. That takes a long time for that to sink in. And if you knew how to be cool, you wouldn't have walked in here, folks, you know. And if you had it under control, you wouldn't need us, you know. And I walked around here listening to all these mamby-pamby stories, you know, and I'm walking around securing the knowledge that I was a heavyweight dude, man, you know. Lost count of acid trips at 1,200, man, drink, you know. All these guys used to say, you know, I spill more liquor than you drink, and I'd look at them and say, well, you aren't so fucking old, you wouldn't spill nothing, man. You shake so damn bad, you know. I never spilled nothing, you know. I never did. I drank out of the bottle. I wouldn't let it get near a glass, you know. I was no fool, man. I learned how to get loaded quick and early and got into needling and came off of hard drugs three times on my own. And I was much too cool for this program. You know, I didn't know what you guys could tell me when I walked into these rooms. I thought, shit, I've done it all, man. I've ran with the big guys, and I've seen it all, you know. And I've watched people sell themselves for drugs, man. And I've, you know, smuggled and watched people sold and watched people killed and had people killed and shot people and got shot and... did a lot of shit out there, man, because that was the life I had chosen. And I don't know what happened. I don't know how I got into the real violent street life I got into. I started out to be a hippie, you know, just one of the flower child space cadets, you know. But somehow it got out of hand, you know. My whole life got out of hand, you know. I don't know if you guys can relate to that, but there was always something going on that I didn't quite plan on. You know, like, why am I here? Who is that person? What is that in his hand, you know? Why is he pointing it at me? What did I do? You know, is that his wife? Do I know her? You know, all kinds of things used to go through my mind, you know? And then they, you know, I used to listen to the people in here, and there was one guy here that sounded like he was a barker for a carnival. And I used to take his inventory, and then John up there, he'd stand up. And David Sorrell, you know, described John. The best I've ever heard when I was brand new, you know, David stood up one day and he says, you know, every time I heard that sucker talk, I didn't know if I was getting married or buried, you know. And I used to say, yeah, man, you know, goddamn right, you know. And Carney fit in, you know, and I went about my business, you know, and I'd go to a meeting and the guy next to me, we were in a house and we had to go to four meetings a week. And one of the ones I used to hate was closed men's because they were always honest, and I hated honesty. I hated anybody to tell me how screwed up I was, man. You know, they used to call me an angry young man here. And the only time I'd get angry is when somebody would tell me the truth, man. And I could tell the degree of the truth, how true it was, by how angry I got at hearing it, man. And I'd walk around angry for weeks, you know, because they'd just come right out and say, you don't know shit. You know, you ain't nothing, man. You don't know how to live. You don't know how to do nothing, you know. And I wouldn't admit that. I was worldly, you see. I've been in, you know, a lot of countries of the world. I'd had three ladies with a baby by each one. Man, I had two businesses that I'd started, flourished, and got bored with and sold. Man, I was cool. And they say, you don't know the first thing about living life in anything close to responsible, happy manner. And I said, what are you talking about? And they say, your addictions are all over you, man. You know, your inability to function without alcohol, your inability to function without drugs, without females, without a job, without a nice car, you know, they're sticking out like you can't believe. All your status is in your arm or on your arm, man. And that's it, you know. You use people like you use drugs and alcohol. I didn't know about that. I didn't know that I'd use people to escape with or make me feel good or make me feel better or, you know, jack me up in the eyes of others. I didn't know I did that shit, man. And they said, yeah, that's pretty real for you. You know, half my life I had people in my arm that I didn't really love. But they looked good there. They looked real good there. And they made me feel good there. And I didn't know I did that sober. I didn't know I really did that getting loaded, you know. I just thought that they were mine and that was my lot and that's the way it went, you know. You snooze, you lose, and too bad, sucker. So I go to these meetings because I had to, you know. And the guy next to me would bump me in the arm, you know. Everybody, they'd say, any newcomers, and the guys would stand up from the house and they'd go, I'm blah, blah, I'm an alcoholic, man. And they'd go, well, I'm blah, blah, and I'm an alcoholic. And then they'd punch me and I'd stand up and I'd say, I'm Harry, you know. And the guy say, you're an alcoholic. I say, hey, man, you know, watch your mouth. Right? So it took me a while, you know. to even go for that. You know, I didn't want this program. I didn't want your unconditional love. I didn't want your goddamn honesty. I didn't want none of that shit, man. I just didn't want to hurt no more, and I didn't want to get loaded no more. And that's all I knew. I didn't want to be a good person. I didn't want values and morals and all that shit. I didn't want those things. I didn't see where they were needed. I just wanted to not get loaded. I just didn't want to go to jail no more, hurt no more, and get loaded no more. And that's all I came for. That's it. I was dying, you know. So I walked around, and I didn't hear nobody tell a story like mine, you know. And it was pointed out at a year and a half that I was probably, might have been going to the wrong meetings, but, you know, that's neither here nor there, because all my addictions were rampant by the time I got here. And then I ran into a dude named Albert, Incredible Albert. Now, I don't know if you guys know Incredible Albert, but he's perhaps one of the most incredible people I've ever met, you know. Actually, he's crazy as a coon. You know, and he hides it real well, you know, and I needed to have him there. Well, okay, Jerry, second crazy as a coon. And don't want to be disrupting no top of no thrones here, right? Anyway, Albert taught me the beginnings of you can still be screwed up, you can still have a good time, you can still sing at work, you can still turn over tractors, you can still probably not know how to do relationships, you can still be a normal, everyday, real human being and make this program and have a very good time. And Albert's attitude at life was my attitude at life. You know, all of a sudden this guy, he comes to the house and says, I want people to work with me, you know. And I go, well, shit, I'm broke, I'll go with you, you know. And everybody in the house is going, no, don't go with that guy, man. He's crazy, you know. That sucker, all he does is talk AA all day. You don't want to go with him, man. You know, and I thought, well, I got to go. I got to work, man. So I went with Albert. And, you know, and we're working on this job, and I look over, and this guy's singing at the top of his lungs in Gilroy, man. I'm thinking, holy shit. Doesn't he know there's Mexicans in Gilroy, man, you know? You don't want to be calling no attention to yourself, right? You know, and Albert's singing like hell, and about an hour and a half later, he dumps over the tractor that he's working on, you know? And I help him lever it up, and we get it back on its wheels, and he goes on about his business. And I thought, maybe, you know, maybe. And then right behind him, I got introduced to a fellow named Paz. Now, when I knew Paz, Paz had 4 years here. And Paz was from my streets. And Paz walked up, and he was one of the first ones that told me, I love you, dummy, you don't know nothing. You know, any idea that you got that you may know something worthwhile here, stuff it, man, because you ain't been here long enough yet. And I thought, what the shit is he talking? I know all kinds of stuff. You'd be surprised at the stuff I know. And he goes, it's not useful, you know. And he was the first one that told me about, you know, and then I fell in love, okay, you know, the great love affair ever. Cecil B. DeMille should have filmed this sucker, man, I tell you. I fell in love, boy, whew, you know. Tell you about Harry in love, it's pitiful. I'm a very pitiful man in love. When I first got here, my addictions just switched. No problem, man. They just went right over to that person, and if I couldn't have them around me at all times, feeding my ego, making me feel good, then I didn't think it was a good relationship. And the lady had lots of time, and I had no time, and I thought she ought to listen to me. And I didn't know nothing. I really didn't know much at all about living clean and sober. You know, it was only at 2 years old here that I finally realized that I didn't even know how to ask a person on a date clean and sober. When I walked into these rooms, I could not remember ever in my life asking anybody out straight, either me straight or her straight or both loaded. Couldn't remember it, you know, and that amazed me, man. And I walked around in amazement for like 2 days with that piece of knowledge. Harry, you never have asked anybody out sober in your life. Even in high school, I never did it, man. You know, I always got loaded in high school to ask people out. And then 2 days later, God goes, oh yeah, well, check this out. You never ask anybody to bed straight either. Now, a person as worldly as I want to be and as cool and as hip and as slick as I want to be, faced with that kind of information about himself, has to start taking a second look at what's going down, man. You just may not know how to live clean and sober. And that's all about living clean and sober. You know, I got here and they started teaching me how to live right away. One of the best things this lady gave me was a family, my first AA family. And I moved in with a group of people that were hardline, old-time AA people that took me aside and started bringing me up here. They taught me to hold my peace. They taught me how to take care of myself, and it had nothing to do with my job and my car and my lady and my money or nothing like that. They taught me how to become spiritually fit. They planted in me the idea that just maybe, even for me, this program would work if I wanted it bad enough. And the first thing they had to do was civilize me. I was a very uncivilized person. I was not polite company, folks. I didn't know which fork to use. You know, I hadn't been in anybody's house in a formal or even an informal meal and so on. I couldn't tell you. People didn't invite me over because I was crazy. And when I got loaded, nobody knew what I would do. And so they used to invite me to their house for dinner, and I'd sit at their table eating their food, and I'd be thinking in the back of my mind, do they know who they're eating dinner with? I wonder if they know who they're eating dinner with, man, you know. If they knew, you know, they would kick me out of here. The whole first year I was in this program, I was in deathly fear that somebody I knew from the streets would walk through those doors needing help. I was deathly afraid of that. Because they were going to walk in and tell on me, man. They were going to walk in and they were going to go, God, I need you people. Who is that sucker? Wow, you let him in here? You know, I ain't coming, man. If that dude's in here, I am not coming in here, you know, because it ain't working, right? Because this guy, you know, has tried everything in the world. But, you know, they taught me I didn't have to fear those people. And at about 9 months, this marvelous, fascinating, great relationship broke up. And I was gone, man. I was devastated. Because you see what happened to Harry in love, that he found out as soon as he fell in love, his program went out the window. He didn't call his sponsor. He didn't talk to his friends. He rarely went to meetings. And he thought he could do it all on his own again. And he just set himself up to get nailed. You know, so the relationship was over, and I was wandering around here 9.5 months sober, hurting worse than I ever hurt in my life, because I never allowed myself to hurt that bad before. Every time I came close to hurting that bad, I always took something or drank something before that. And I mean hurt. Pain, and I wasn't used to that shit, you know, and didn't know what to do with it. Didn't have a sponsor. Albert was my first sponsor, you see, and him and Paz used to co-sponsor me, and bounce me back and forth between them is what they used to do. And Albert used to tell me, you know what, there's a lot of ladies here, man, go out and play, just don't fall in love for a year. He says, especially you, Harry, don't fall in love with it for a year, you know. Don't do it, I'm telling you, you know. You ain't got a chance if you do. And I told him, no problem, Albert. God damn it, I'm a man of the world and worldly and cool and hip, and that ain't no way, man. And, you know, first person that took me home, man, boom, you know. I love you, and I've been looking for you all my life, man. You know. You know. Oh, man, it was terrible, you know. So I went up to tell Albert this, you know, and he was my sponsor. And I went up and I said, Albert, you know, you don't understand this. Okay, and Albert understood everything. You know, he knew me like a book, man. He used to scare the hell out of me, you know, because he knew me well. He did. He knew alcoholics of our type well. Okay, and I said, well, what happened, you see, and this, you know, this is not like you were talking about, Albert. You know, this none of your stuff applies in this one, you see, because I didn't set out to do this one. It just happened, you know. Albert, it must be God's will, you know. You know, I was a prime time rationalizer, you know, and Albert looked at me and he said, Harry, you got your head up your ass, man, you know. You got that. I used to have a dog that was cross-eyed, you know, until he fell in love, and then they'd straighten out and he'd get a spark in him, man, you know, and my eyes would straighten out and had a spark in him, you know. I was in love, man, I was in lust, you know, and I couldn't differentiate at all. And, I don't know if I was in lust even, you know. My love, when I first got here and for my whole life, really, I used to tell people I loved them. And that used to sometimes mean I wanted to sleep with them, and sometimes it meant I loved them. And sometimes it meant I just need to be held because I'm lonely. And I never knew how to differentiate those things. You know, this program has taught me to differentiate those things. This has taught me that it's okay to walk up to somebody and say, I need to be held today. Do you got time? Or would you mind? Or whatever, you know. Anyway, I went up to Albert and I said, okay, Albert, this is what's happening. You know, I'm moving out of the house into her apartment. He says, well, how long have you known her? I said, oh, about 6 days, man. You know, long time, Albert. You know. Well, this is real. And he looked at me and he made, you know, the fatal mistake that all, you know, that he could have made with me. And he said, Harry, I'm your sponsor and it's either her or me. And I looked him right in the eye and said, see you later, Albert. You know? So at 9.5 months, I got crazy and I was left all alone, man, and I didn't have a sponsor. You know, I was running on my own energy, you know, plus my street knowledge, all the knowledge I brought into here said, see, I didn't know about unconditional love. And I didn't know about loving both people in the relationship. And I didn't know that, you know, just because two people join doesn't mean that you quit liking either one of them. You learn to love them both, or you do love them both as much as you can. So when the relationship ended, I, of course, had not bothered to make my own friends. I used hers. I had not bothered to have my own meetings. I used hers. I had not bothered, you know, to do anything on my own socially. I used hers, right? And my street sense said when two people split, they go with her and you're left on, you know, holding the bag, man. The friends divide up and then you go with them and they talk shit about each other forever. You know, that son of a bitch and that, you know, however that goes. It don't work here. That ain't the way it happens here. What happens is the thing splits and those both people still get loved by all the people that loved them in the first place. And I didn't know that. I wasn't ready for that one. I was ready for choosing sides and calling each other a thousand motherfuckers and all that shit, you know? You know, I used to sit, how many can I depend on, you know? And I couldn't depend on nobody, man, because I didn't know anybody, you know? Except Albert, right? So, you know, when they left with that family who was now inaccessible to me because the way life was as they went with her, it got awful lonely, man, and it got awful scary, and it got awful crazy. What happens is the thing splits, and those both people still get loved by all the people that loved them in the first place. And I didn't know that. I wasn't ready for that one. I was ready for choosing sides and calling each other a thousand motherfuckers and all that shit, you know? You know, I used to sit, how many can I depend on, you know? And I couldn't depend on nobody, man, because I didn't know anybody, you know? Except Albert, right? So, you know, when they left with that family who was now inaccessible to me because the way life was as they went with her, it got awful lonely, man, and it got awful scary, and it got awful crazy, and I got awful angry, and I got awful agitated, and I didn't know what to do with that stuff because I didn't have anybody to talk to, you know? And so I was sitting in my apartment one day, and I said, okay, this is it, Harry. God damn it, you got to start doing these steps, man. It's either grow or go. It's either quit wasting these people's time or get on the ball, man. This is it. You're done. You are that close to... You know, I've been there three times in this program, and I'm lucky probably I've only been there three times. But we hit this very crystal place in our thinking and in sobriety sometimes. For all the, you know how Ole describes it best as being caught in your own crossfire, okay, you know? You know how we are when we try to think about something and we got 30 pieces of information coming at the same time, right? And it's so inundating that we just walk around going like that. We can't function with it, right? You know, we get caught in our own crossfire. All these ideas, I'll do this, but, you know, like that. And you can't think, you know? And what happens is you get driven down to the spot where all that goes away, and your thinking clears up real well, and there's only two things there, and that's work or get loaded, man. You know, grow or go. And that's it. All that mind fuck's gone. It's either do the next step, man, or get into this program, or get the hell out of here. Period, folks. That's it. There ain't no more questions there. There's only two. Which one do you want to choose, you know? And thank God, and I do thank God today, that I kept running into the program, back into the program. And if you're ever at that space and you're ever wondering what to do, run into the program. Get the first person with more time than you have, and if you can't find one of them, get anybody. But run in here. You know, all our lives we've been running out of. You know, we get in a good situation and usually screw it up, and when it got bad, we'd split, right? You know, cut and run, man, just like that. Don't do that here. Come in. Because what you're going to find out is you got this little small group of people who have become your guides and your teddy bears and whatever they've become. But there's all these groups all over this program that are welcome and they're waiting for you to come and say, I'm hurting, man, help me. You know, and there's people all over that says, yeah, okay, I got time, you know. So I decided, well, hell, I better take my fourth step. That's probably the next thing I need to do, you know. I knew one, you know, my life was unmanageable, man. I couldn't do nothing. I was sitting wasting my time. Number two, I was crazy as a coon for a long time. Three, you know, what the hell, you know, I'd always done that. I'd always turned my life and my will over to God, right? You never understand until you're about three that the ones you do the most are step 3, 7, 10, 11, and 12, and you do them almost daily, you know. You'll wonder about your... if you're ever going to get well sometimes, and sometimes it's so good that you don't, it doesn't cross your mind. So I started writing furiously. I started writing fourth step furiously. And then about the next day after I started writing, I remembered, hey, I ain't got a sponsor, man. Who am I going to give this shit to, you know? This is a flaw in my plans that I didn't quite foresee, you know? So the way I did it, and this is honest to God truth, I said, I'm going to go over to Mustard Seed and Cupertino, and the first guy through the door gets me. Lucky sucker, you know, he gets me, you know, and And I went over there, and I got there at 7:30, and the meeting started at 8, and I sat in the couch in the back, and I was going, okay, come on, God. You know, and I mean, I got this sheet of papers, and I'm hot, and I'm ready to spill everything, you know. I ain't never trusted nobody in my life. You know, I got a grand jury indictment for giving away a joint in this county in 1969, and when the police came, the lady I was living with didn't know why they were there. And I was making $10,000 to $15,000 a week manufacturing and distributing drugs, and she didn't know why they were there. She had no idea that's how I got my money. I was that tight when I got here. You know, you just didn't talk. You didn't show no emotions, and you didn't talk, man, because people were there to jump on you if you did, you know. So I'm sitting in this church, and I'm talking to God, and I, you know, I learned how to talk to God. If you're worried about God, establish conversation immediately. Get verbal. Don't sit in your head. He ain't going to listen to you in your head. He ain't going to understand what you're telling him in your head. Talk to him. Get it out loud. Make a fool out of yourself. Drive down the street and talk to him in your car. You know, and don't be nice. Ask him what the shit this is, you know. How come it's so goddamn crazy, man, you know. You got to help me today, man, you know. I don't know. You should see me talk to my God. I used to throw rocks at the sucker until I'd get pitcher's elbow, man. I'd go in the mountains and just scream at him. I can't understand this shit. I don't want this stuff. I don't want unconditional love. I don't want service. I don't want honesty. I want to be sober, and that's all. Take this shit away, you know. And you say, back in there, man. Go back in there. You're not going to get well up in these mountains. Get back in the program. So I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting for God to send me the lucky fellow that was going to get to be my sponsor, you know. And I had, you know, references and credits and the whole scene. I'd been here for a while. Getting fairly well known. People used to call on me just to laugh at me, man, because I was off the wall, you know. I had no real knowledge about anything. And I thought I did. I sounded good, I guess. But, so I sit there for 20 minutes waiting for the first guy through the door. And I'm telling God, God, this is the man. This is the man I'm going to work with. You got to send me this man. And I looked up, and the first man came through the door, and it was Albert. Now, I can't tell Albert I'm hurting, man. You know, Albert walks out, how's it going? Oh, great, Albert, you know. And I sit back and go, second man, God. So, you know, I had a great degree of honesty, let me tell you, you know. You're talking pure honesty here. I'm telling you, man. My attitude about this program sucked. Literally, man, I was blowing smoke all over this program, except to the people that knew. See, we get in here and we fuck around and we think, well, nobody knows I ain't taking my steps, man. Nobody knows I ain't got no sponsor, man. You know, nobody knows what I'm doing, man. And nobody knows except the people that know, you know. And then you stand out like a sore thumb, man. You know, you're running around crazy every other day and you're going, oh, they don't know, man. You know, same thinking you had when you were drinking. You know, you come in here and worry that you're going to get recognized. Shit, everybody else already knows. You're the last one to know, man, you know. Everybody knew I was a drunk, except me. Everybody knew I was an addict, except me. Everybody knew I was an asshole, except me. I thought I was cool. Especially the what?
Ex.
Ex what? Oh, wife? Hey, you know, I tell you how your ego gets deflated here. My second month in sobriety, all three of my exes wrote me and asked me if I needed to borrow money. All three of my exes have better paying jobs than I have today. All three of my exes were making a minimum of $40,000 a year. And when they wrote me in that recovery house at the nadir of my life, do you think I had loving kindness in my heart? You know? Oh, man. You know, God is funny. You know? God will bring you right around, let me tell you, man. He will move you where you need to be moved. So I took my steps, and I started the process, and the guy that I picked was a man named Perry. Now, Perry was a good man, except he was a doctor, and I used to have to give him vocabulary lessons, man. He'd say, what does that word mean? And I'd have to stop in the middle of my fourth step and said, it means da na na na. What does snooze you lose mean? I'd have to tell him what that meant. You know, I had to explain to him everything I was talking about, which shows you that there was no way he was going to catch me doing anything. Right? I just give him a bunch of mumbo-jumbo, leave him on third base, and I was gone, man, you know. He'd go, yeah, that's great, Harry, you know. I go, yeah, you know, gone again, you know. About that time, Paz got drunk, and I nearly died there. Paz is my hero. He was my God. And it really hurts. I don't know if you've had people go out, and you've been here for a while, it really hurts. That really hurts when one of your heroes goes away. And I went over to see him when he was drunk, and he said, get the fuck out of here, man. You know, I've been sober more times than you thought about getting sober. And that hurt, too. You know, and because he was a bad drunk just like me. He was a bad drunk just like me. And when he came back in, I was the first one to walk up and try to shake his hand as soon as I saw him and said, God, it's good to see you back. And he didn't like that, you know, because he gave me this program, you know, and that hurt, man. That really hurt me because I thought he had a great program, and he did. And he has a good program today. You know, he just didn't maintain the spiritual conditioning that the book talks about, you know. And he was a lesson. I tell you something, you know, don't lament the people that go out of this program. For everyone that goes out, 20 people stay here. I'm not kidding you, man. 10 or 15 people that know that person personally go, God damn, man, you know, what was she doing or what was he doing and what am I not doing? And you check yourself out if you want to stay here. You know, I always have. I always did. Oh, God, to go on and on and on and on. I got back into the same relationship 3 times. I love the lady. I can't tell her that. My pride probably won't let me tell her that even now. But she's a wonderful lady. She's very honest. And she's crazy in exactly the opposite way that I'm crazy. So we always were butting heads. We were either dead off into service or arguing like crazy. It was a wonderful relationship. And probably taught me more about Harry than anything I've ever done. I tell you, it taught me how I used people, taught me about my real inability to give and take, taught me how inflexible I was. It taught me a lot of things that I needed to know about me. I did the steps, got on the trail to service in this program. I found out that if I stayed only in myself, I would sit in the back of the room with my Beware a Dog sign on and snarl at anybody that got near me, man, you know. But if I learned to get out, man, and get into giving things away and working with people and giving... You know, I've been a rip-off artist all my life. I've been a taker. All my life I wanted people to give to me, or if they left it, I took it, or however that worked. And this is the first time in the first process I've learned to go back in and give it away. And I'm learning to do that without beating my own drum. And that's the hardest thing to do here. It's real easy to get into service. It's real hard to get into service and not let anybody know. I'm not kidding you. You know, because we always want to say, look at me, man, you know, I'm so great, blah, 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 blah. And I did it for a long, long time here, man. And now I don't want nobody to know I'm doing it. Now it's part of me giving back what was given to me, you know, and it's very important to me. I've done the Unity Days. You know, Bruce and I and Jerry have done the Unity Days, the last 2 Unity Days. I ain't been near that stage. I don't want near that stage. I don't do them things so you guys will love me. I do those things so I can give them back. And to tell you the truth, I do them to get high. I don't know if you've ever been involved with putting on this thing that you guys are, that this group's talking about, putting on this young people's conference. If you do something where you can get 600 or 700 or 800 people into that mood that we get into as partying sober alcoholics, man, you feel good. You absolutely, that's how you get high here. That's how you learn how to like yourself here, you know. I've taken meetings. The first 2 meetings I got in this program, they gave to ensure me staying here. You know, I ain't going to tell you that they gave them to me because I was great. They gave them to me because they said, Harry, if we give you this 6-month meeting, you might hang around here for 6 months. And as soon as that one was over, they gave me another one, man. And that's great business, you know. I ain't no great shakes, folks. It's the power of the people in this program and that program, period, that have kept me here. You know, and the degree of my insanity on a given day is still high. And the degree of my insanity on a given day is under control. And it all depends on my fit spiritual condition and what I'm doing for other people, not what I'm doing for Harry. You know, and things have happened here. They tell me, you get here, you align yourself with this power, man, and your life will take off. And I looked at him and said, bullshit. You know, horse shit. When I was about 9 months sober going through all this crazy period, I couldn't find a job, man. I hadn't worked in 2 years before I got here because I couldn't. It took too much time up. You understand? You know, I had a lot to do. I had to be playing my music, practicing that one note, you know. Another ego deflator that I got when I walked in here is I'd made my living as a professional bass guitar player for 6 to 7 years out there. That had been one of my main incomes. I got here, got sober, got back to my bass at about 3 months old and found out I knew 3 tunes. I played them faster or slower depending on the time that was needed, man. And that's all I knew, 3 tunes. You know, and I was sitting in my backyard waiting to get discovered. You know, the degree of our insanity is amazing. Our ability to lie to ourselves is amazing. We will tell ourselves it's okay when we're doing the worst of behavior. I'm not kidding. I've done it. They say that anything you've done drunk, you'll do sober, and I agree. Usually in spades. You know, I tell you how step 7 works in my life. The removal of your defects of character, the same way getting sober worked in my life. I got drunk and loaded so goddamn much and so goddamn often that even I couldn't stand myself anymore. And when I get a defect of character removed, it's because I'm running it so goddamn heavy even I can't stand it anymore. And I decide not to do it anymore with his help and say, I don't need this shit anymore. You know, it's been a process of discovery and discarding. It has. It's been a process of finding out who I am and what I have and what I want to keep and what I don't want to keep. There's two ways to get knowledge here. That's by finding out who you want to be like and being like them, and finding out who you don't want to be like and not being like them. And it's that simple. You see somebody that you like and you like their program, get to know them. They just might save your life. You know, I was in a meeting last night that was basically a thing for a fellow that had died on Tuesday, and I've been going to meetings with this man for 3 years, and I've admired this man for 3 years. And I've loved this man for 3 years, and I probably don't know him at all. You know, I mean, I've loved him at a distance, and I've never taken the time. I've always been afraid. You know, I still got this fear about not quite being worthy. You know, I did some pretty bad things out there, and I'm not quite sure if I'm ready for polite company yet. Not quite ready for prime time, you know. But so I never approached the man. And I sat in the meeting last night and again said, geez, I'm really sorry I never did that. I'm really sorry I never got to know him better. You learn to do everything here. You'll go through relationships. You'll go through deaths. You'll go through going to jail. You'll go through losing your job. You'll go through getting a job. You'll go through everything here. And you will be provided for. And somebody used to, they used to say that to me all the time in the meetings. And I'd say, that's horseshit, man. How are you going to be provided for? You got to go out there and rip it off. You got to go get it yourself. You know, you got to find a dummy and use them, man, and get it yourself. My first job here, I was 9 months old, crazy, hadn't worked in 2 years, been in and out of jails most of my life at various times. And I went over to the employment office, and they had a thing on the board for a school district. And I said, well, I'm going to apply for it just to get practice. I know I ain't going to get it. There ain't no school district in this valley that'd ever hire me. And I walked in, and the guy, it was the day before school started, and they were going to have a football game that night, and the guy looked at me and said, can you take orders? And I said, yeah. He says, you're hired. And I said, what? He says, you are hired, man. I said, you got to be kidding. He says, go down and get your fingerprints, you know. And I went, I got a set, wait. You know, I got them from the post office. I always check it out, you know, and I drive through. No, you know, I was never that bad. I was pretty lightweight, to tell you the truth. But that was it, man. 3 weeks later, my records come in, and they went crazy because they'd hired me, but by then it was too late, man, you know. They came back and said, how'd you get this guy in here? And he says, he's a good man. And by that time, I was working my ass off, and they said, yeah, he's a good man. And I told my boss what I was trying to do about getting sober and the whole 9 yards, and I got straight with him from the gate and said, this is me. This is what I got to do. And he backed me up. He went to bat for me. And I thought, well, you know, I thought maybe he was a dummy at that point. I thought, God, I did it again, man. My con's still working, you know. And after that, you know, oh, really? I'm talking about sick, man. I ain't talking healthy here, you know. I'm talking doing the life at the best of my ability is what I'm talking about. Everybody says I was always real bad out there. You weren't. You were the best you could be for as long as you could be that good, you know. And when you weren't that good no more, you got here, man, and you better know that. You gave it your best shot. Don't fucking ever think you didn't give it your best shot. You did. That's why you stayed out there so long. You know? That's why, man. And I did. I gave it my... I shot every angle and scheme and way and means that I could do before I got here, you know? About 6 months after that, I was driving down the street in my truck, and I had let this lady back into my place, the house, for the second time, and she was having a hard time and not working and all that, so I assumed my bill, and they hired me at $777 a month. You know, I mean, big time bucks, right? You know, I used to drink that much in an evening, man. You know, and I'm a maintenance man at a high school, right? And I'm watching all these young girls run around going, no, Harry. 15 will get you 20, man. You know, go to work. Get out of here, you know. And it was real hard. God was funny. God's always been funny in my life, you know. And like giving me Albert again for the second time. He's always brought me right back to the lesson. Anyway, he always has, man. And if you doubt that, just keep shouting. He'll bring you right back to the lesson. So I had the lady in, and I was crazy, and I was trying to 12-step, man, and I was going out to the fucking ranch, and I was going to the boys' ranch, and I was doing this, and I was doing that, and finally I was right, and I had a 1957 Chevrolet pickup truck, man, I was high-rolling like crazy, you know, wondering when the next meal was going to come from, because I was trying to stretch myself too thin, and finally I just stopped in the middle of Bascom Avenue, you know, in the lane, and just screamed in the top of my voice, God, you son of a bitch, how can I do your work? How can you expect me to get out here and do your work and I'm starving? You got me crazy here because I ain't got no money. You know, if something don't happen, then to hell with your work, man. I ain't gonna do it. Screw it. I'm gonna do whatever I gotta do to get money, and that's all. I'm sorry. And then I got back in my truck and started up and went. And that's me and God, that's our conversations, folks, you know. That, you know, either he's yelling at me or I'm yelling at him, one or the other. You know, not subtle. There ain't no subtle in my life. Anyway, 2 days later, this guy comes in and he says, Harry, you want another job? And I said, what? He says, you want another job? And I was real busy. I said, sure. He goes, here, go talk to these people. And he gave me the card and I put it in my pocket and promptly forgot about it. He comes back in the next week. He says, Harry, get in the car. And I said, I got in the car and I said, what do you want? He says, we're going to go talk to this guy. Went over to this Metal Gold Dairy in Los Gatos, man. They make ice cream, okay? I don't know nothing from ice cream. You know, I didn't even eat ice cream when I was loaded, you know? And I walk in, and the guy goes, you work at the high school down there, huh? And I go, yeah. He says, well, what do you know about refrigeration? And I said, nothing. I mean, I said, not much. I don't, not much. He says, well, what do you know about ammonia? And I said, not much. He says, what do you know about ice cream? I said, nothing at all, man. You know? He says, you want to start work tomorrow? Swear to God, man. You know? And I looked at him and I said, doing what? You know? And he says, we want you to be a plant engineer, $10 an hour under the table, no taxes, man. We'll keep you busy at least 30 hours a week. $300 job handed to me 2 days after I stopped and said, you motherfucker, this is crazy. And then I started thinking, you know what, maybe, just maybe, this might be for real. You know? And then I got real scared, you know. See, I always liked God when he was distant, you know. I didn't really, you know, I wanted him to pay attention to me, but it scared me every time he did, you know. And that started my love affair with my God, as I understand it. And we still talk to each other verbally. I still don't sit down and talk to my God in my head. I still walk. I always tell him, how's that, man? Did you see that? You know? And it's always like he's right here going, yeah, that's neat, man, you know? I go, did I get you off too, man? He goes, yeah, that's pretty neat, you know? And he's my partner. He's my friend, and he's always there. And I'm never alone anymore, man. And I never had a God. And I always thought only sissies believed in God. You know, I used to come in here and I used to think that people hid behind their gods. And I used to think they might have hidden this program. And then finally I realized that there ain't no cowards in these rooms. The cowards are all gone. The cowards only last 30 days, man. It takes a hell of a commitment to take a look at yourself and learn how to live clean and sober. Don't fool yourself. If you've been sober 10 days, man, it's the best 10 days you ever had, and you've done something. You never had it before. If you're sober 30 days, man, you're cooking. If you're sober 60, 90, whatever, man, you know, you're good. You know, I used to sit and look at guys with 90 days and think, Jesus, how did they get them 90 days, man? It was inconceivable for me. You know, I mean, those were my heroes, not the guys with 20. 20 guys with 20 years were all lying, you know. But the guys with 90 days, I could see gritting your teeth and making it 90 days, but I was still impressed, you know. And now I'm going to be 4 in May. Yeah, I'm going to be 4 on Mother's Day in May. I got here on Mother's Day. You don't think God has a sense of humor, you know? Paz and Albert both used to tell me that you're the, you know, if any mother needs to be in these rooms, it's you, man. You know?
You know, it's the only way they remember my birthday. Pa's wants to call his mom and then call me. You know? It's crazy. The way life is right now is it's just fine. God, is it good, man. I ain't had no trouble other than the trouble of my own making in years. I ain't been to jail in years. I ain't had a bill collector at the door in years. My income has doubled just about every year in sobriety. I have more friends than I'd care to tell you. I know maybe 10,000 people in this program. They ask me to come out of town all the time. They ask me to go to Petafuckin-Luma, man. You know? Street junkie like me and them chicken farmers want to hear from me, and it amazes me, you know? It always amazes me. And Sonora, you know, got all places Sonora, you know? I didn't think they got drunk in Sonora. You know? I don't know what they did, man, but I didn't know that. But, you know, and I guess what I really want to leave you with is this, is the best gift I ever got in sobriety, man, is me. I'm a good man right now. I really am. You know, there's a lot of room for improvement, and I got a very long way to go in a lot of departments. But God, you know, thank God, I tell you what, love your friends. They're the ones that are going to keep you here. I ain't kidding you, because as soon as you start getting too fucking big for your britches, they're going to walk in and say, remember the day you were pounding the table in Campbell? John knows that one, man. John walked into a meeting in Campbell, and God is funny. I was in the middle of this relationship, and I was crazy angry because, you see, I didn't get what I wanted. If you think somebody's in love with you, tell them no. I'm just going to... That's just an aside. If you think you've got the best love affair in the world going, man, tell that person no about something, okay, and watch their reactions. You'll find out right away what we got going here. Anyway, I walked, you know, I said, okay, God, this is it, man. I'm so screwed up, and I don't want nobody to know how screwed up I am. I'm not going to talk in no meetings until something happens, until it comes clean. Until I don't embarrass me and you. You know? You know? Always making deals, I ain't kidding you, you know. So the next five meetings I went to, three I got asked to open, one I got asked to chair, and one I got asked to close, man, you know. God said, oh yeah, watch this, man. You can't pass when you get asked to open a meeting. I don't care who you are. You get asked to close a meeting. You can't pass. You know, so I was up there crying, man, saying, I don't understand this shit, this growing up shit, and I don't want to grow up, man, and I want to stay a kid, and goddamn it, you know, they took away my toys, man. What is this stuff, you know? And by the time I got to Campbell, I was just a volcano, man, I was just a volcano, and I wanted to hurt somebody. I didn't know who, it didn't really matter, you know? It didn't really matter, I just wanted it out of me, you know, out of me, and I was pent. And John walked into the other meeting. I said, John, don't call on me, man. Whatever you do, don't call on me. You know? And he said, Harry, I would never do that. No problem, man. You just sit there and relax and listen. And I went, oh, God. You know, and for the first time in six meetings, man, it was all right. And I got up there and listened to John talk. And I love to hear him. I love him. He's one of my favorite people. And then he says, and... That was a guy when I walked in here said, don't call on him for nothing, so we're going to have him open the meeting, you know? And I went from laid back to pounding on the table just like that, man. I went, you know, I feel like hurting somebody. I feel like killing somebody, you know? I don't know what's going on here. God damn it, I'm crazy. It doesn't make sense. This, you know, none of this makes sense. It was so bad that this guy followed, came home with me from the meeting because he didn't know what I was going to do. He did not know if I was going to hurt somebody or get loaded or what I was going to do, man. And I was, you know, I was that nuts, man. And I sit in my kitchen, and this guy, who's as crazy as I am, is telling me about his new way to get rich in sobriety. He's going to put fishing line down the safe deposit box at the bank and draw it out, right? So I'm sitting here trying to get some sort of spiritual, and this guy's running this number on me, you know. And I'm pacing my God, you know, hey, sobriety is weird, you know. You listen to all these guys tell you how straight it is. It is a matter of growing up, man, and that's part of growing up, right? Trying it until it don't work, you know. I'm pacing the kitchen, and I am gritting my teeth, and I'm crazy, and I can hear this sucker on and on about, yeah, and if you draw it out too much, 80-pound test, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking, even loaded, you didn't listen to this kind of shit, man. You know, what's going on here, you know? And I just stopped in the middle of my kitchen and I went like that. And mentally, I just screamed, you know, and this guy's, and I just said, God damn it, take it away. And something popped right here. I went, and it was gone. And I went, and the fool got up and said, you don't need me no more. And he went out the door. You want to tell me that you don't know there's a God here when shit like that comes down in your life? You know, I didn't find a God by believing in him. I found a God by not being unable to believe in him. I no longer could say there ain't no power taking care of Harry. I couldn't say that no more. He showed me, man. He took it completely out of my mind, you know, completely away from me. As you can see tonight, because I love to talk, man. Don't take yourself seriously, man. You know, you ain't gonna know. You're doing something you never done before in your life, and that's trying to live clean and sober. And you ain't gonna be good at it for a long, long time, man. I don't care what you say, you just ain't gonna be good at it, man. You know, and you're gonna think you're good, and you're gonna get humbled, and it's gonna, you know, it's just the way, that's the process. The object is to stay on top of it and keep reporting on yourself. This is where I am now. This is it now. You know, this is what I got going, and I'm way over. And you know what? I'm also burnt out. Thanks for letting me share.
That was great. Okay, let's close the meeting in the usual fashion.